Jim G Money. Here at another lovely Wednesday evening right here in the heart of Wailuku Town on the beautiful island of Maui in the great state of Hawaii. And boy, oh boy, have we got a show for you tonight. Now, last week, of course, was Thanksgiving. We didn't talk about much, but, or nothing at all. We talked turkey and had ourselves, I hope, a lovely Thanksgiving, which we'll get to momentarily. But this week should be very fun because this week we're going to talk about everything Ghostbusters, all about afterlife. That's all coming up in just a few minutes. We'll be joined, I believe, shortly by Format as well. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Todd Bernardi. But let's get right to who is here before we do anything else. First off, this guy right here. He is the producer seducer. He's also the man that is completely disgusted by the Netflix display of the live-action Cowboy Bebop. You just ask him. He's pissed. Ladies and gentlemen, please say hello to the one and only Kai Kai. How's it going, Kai?
Can you stop putting words in my mouth?
Hey.
You assume I know what I know I'm going
to
say?
I didn't have to put words in your mouth. I didn't have to put words in your mouth at all. So you that's what you told me. Anyway. Also joining us this evening, unbelievably, he is our man in black. He is our punk rock superstar, our horror aficionado, and can sometimes be an all-around great guy. He is the guitarist for a tremendous band called The Minorities. And if I'm not mistaken, he may have some news how the Minorities and the Maui Comic Con are going to meld and come together. That's his words. Ladies and gentlemen, everybody say hello to the Dark Knight himself. It's Gannon! How's it going, Gannon? Come in over.
Yeah!
Oh, there you are. Okay, I can hear you now. Come in over.
I am here.
Yes! How are you, sir? Haven't seen you in a while.
Me neither.
By the way, that is a great avatar, by the way. That's the kind
it's
of...
It's pronounced Evader.
Oh, Evader. That's the kind of great gameplay that I've been experiencing on Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. So, but apparently, if I'm not mistaken...
If you love that picture, it proves that this new version... Rockstar just made everything gayer.
They did. I will say, to be fair to Rockstar, they have been releasing some console patches that have fixed a couple of things, like the rain and some of the odder bugs that have been in the game. But so it's been a little more fun to play because I put it down for a bit. But I've been playing it on the Xbox. Luckily I have Game Pass, so I get to play it for free. I really want it on my Switch, but they haven't really done anything with the Switch version yet. So I'm very excited to try that. Big shout out to Jennifer, who's in the chat right now. Aloha, Jennifer. Nice to see you. We're talking Ghostbusters, like I said, so that's coming up very, very shortly. Now, Gannon, how was your Thanksgiving? Do people like yourself celebrate that holiday?
I don't know. What does that mean?
What?
You know, punk rockers. Or eccentric superhero billionaires.
We're people just like everyone else.
Oh, you are people? Okay. Okay. That's fair. I didn't know that. By the way, if you guys are listening and you hear Gannon, if he sounds a little tinny or whatever, he's live from his phone because he's out and about doing stuff, I guess. So he is not in front of the regular microphone, but don't let that...
I'm outside your house, Greg.
What's that?
Look out your window.
Oh, my goodness, you are. Oh, my goodness, you are. I'm also joined by...
No.
What?
Look out your window right now.
Shut up. Anyway, we have a very fun show in store. We've got two more guests, I believe, that are coming in shortly, but... We should get to the main course of the program. I'm going to actually talk about one thing first, happening December 11th and 12th in Maui. at the Maui Beach Hotel. Maui Comic-Con is back December 11th and 12th. Gannon, of course, it's very exciting for us to have Maui Comic-Con back. How are what's happening with you and the minorities that day? Or the day before, if I'm not mistaken. I can't remember. Do you guys have something happening as well?
I think we're supposed to get together and go hiking.
Oh, we're going hiking?
Yeah, they were going to do Ia Valley.
Nice.
And then, I don't know, maybe have a picnic.
how nice of you. That sounds so sweet of you.
It's quaint.
It is very quaint. A punk rock superstar and an eccentric superhero billionaire going on a picnic. That sounds so quaint. I like that very much.
You got to stop saying billionaire.
Oh, isn't the Dark Knight a billionaire?
It's so hard keeping all these women away from me. I don't need more reasons for them to keep chasing me.
Fair enough. I'm sorry. I'll play it down. A millionaire. I'm sorry. That's what I should have said.
You have to lower the bar a little bit.
Fair enough. I just want to say that Maui Comic-Con is going to be December 11th and 12th. The minorities are going to be a part of it. They're going to be holding a very...
We are?
That's what I thought. You guys were having a little festival before it, aren't you? Like a little music fest?
We're going to change our plans.
Oh, man. Well, that's horrible.
We haven't been able to do a show for less than a year.
Sure.
Because of COVID.
Sure.
And... we decided to kind of use the convention as an excuse to leech on it.
Fantastic. Well, that's good. I mean, we'd like to have some live music now. That'd be great.
Since like one guy won't be there.
That's a good point.
But we used to do Misfits, which is the Misfits tribute show yearly, usually during Halloween. But, we decided to give it a shot for this year next to Comic-Con. We were going to call it Christmas Fest, but it just didn't look right on the flyer.
Oh, like Christmas Fest, you mean? That would have been kind of cool.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. But you decided against that.
Alika graciously allowed us to consider or to basically use it as the official kickoff for Maui Comic-Con.
That is fantastic. Will you be holding
We are day one, basically.
Wow. So you're going to be at the Miami Beach Hotel performing. That is sweet.
No. The show's going to be at Request.
Oh, cool.
Where Maui Comics and Collectibles is situated, everyone should know.
Cool.
But, yeah, the show will start there. It will be limited capacity due to county guidelines. But it still should be around the same amount of people that we would normally get for a show, so I don't want that to kind of deter people from coming.
Alika in the chat says a very merry Xmas Fest. Nothing wrong with that. I kind of agree. But ladies and gentlemen, if I may.
Why isn't he on the show?
I have no idea. If I may. He is our man in black. He is the master of
magic. He said I was the man in black.
He is the maven of magic. And he is our gaming guru. Ladies and gentlemen, everybody say hello to Format! Format, how you doing, brother?
Hey, everybody.
Man, so glad you could be here.
Oh, me too.
I was excited because you said your meeting didn't start till 8:30, and I was like, where is this guy?
Yeah, well,
you can't pull me, Greg.
That happens on Wednesdays. I get out at 6, so you're the guy that wants to start stuff at 6.
Format, so. Jennifer sends a howdy-doody your way.
Hello, hello.
Yeah. Well, listen. Now, as you know.
Greg.
Yes, sir.
Greg.
Yes, sir.
You can't fool me. That's clearly Taika Waititi.
No. I watched Free Guy, and Taika Waititi was much thinner. No offense, Format, but much thinner. I mean, they do.
Oh, am I Taika?
Yeah, you're Taika.
No, I was like, what?
Yeah, it's you. It's totally you.
You have a really weird way of saying less powerful.
But Format, we were just talking about, before we get into our Ghostbusters reviews and things like that, was there any information that you can share about what's coming up for Maui Comic-Con? Any new info?
make sure you eat before the show.
Because there's no food. Is that right? Well, that sucks. Well, that sucks.
There's going to be something. We'll figure something out. I don't know. It just, yeah.
Well,
the timing of certain things just didn't quite work out, so we're trying other things to make it happen.
Well, we do know, of course, we do have some great guests there. Frank Cho is going to be part of that as well. Ed Piskor and Mr. Rugg himself will be there as well. That's very...
Are those people?
Those are people. Alika says that... he said that they got Maui Comic Con got the restaurant open from 11 to 2. Ooh.
Oh, okay. Cool.
That's the kind of power Alika has.
Wow. Yeah. He also says Ernie Reyes Jr. and HSI daughter Lotus Blossom. Not sure what exactly that means, but I think it's a good thing. So good.
He might be having a stroke.
He might be having a stroke.
From trying to put a convention together in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's a good point. Anyway, Ernie Reyes Jr. and his daughter Lotus Blossom. What, they're going to be at the con? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir.
Oh, wow. Ernie Reyes Jr. is going to be at the con. That is incredible.
Someone doesn't follow the social media.
Uh-huh. I
Kino himself.
I know.
So bring your pizza boxes to get signed.
Super, super exciting.
Oh, can we order pizza to the show?
That would be exciting.
I don't And will he bring it?
Hmm.
That's a good question.
I don't know. I don't know if he still has the jacket.
Now,
did he mention that he knows martial arts?
Yes, I think he did. Once or twice. I think he did once or twice. That's super exciting. We gotta
find the most obscure thing he's ever done
right.
to say to him and see if it annoys him.
Okay. Will that be your mission, Gannon? Because if that is your mission, I'm okay with it. I just want to know what it is so I can be there when you talk to him.
You know what I forgot he was in?
What's that?
The Last Dragon.
Yes! Of course he's in The Last Dragon. You said obscure.
I always forget he's in that movie.
Oh, wow. I'm surprised.
He's also in Red Sonja.
Yes.
That's the second one. Those are the two that I always forget that he's in because, you know, everybody just fixates on Shownuff.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody ever talks about Red Sonja. But, yeah, it's kind of funny that those are, like, two of the things that I always forget that he's in.
What I know about what I do know is that, if I'm not mistaken, Shownuff is the master.
Oh, and by the way, Lotus Blossom, before you completely bury that, she was in that, what is that, We Could Be Heroes thing on Netflix. I didn't watch it.
What is that one?
It's so Robert Rodriguez. Like, I might be getting it completely wrong.
No, you're right. You're right.
So,
Teeny Bopper Superheroes.
Greg, it's actually a relief that you don't know what we're talking about because it'd be really creeped out if you were like, oh, my God, I saw that.
I have no idea what you're talking about. That's why I was
letting that movie was amazing.
I was letting you roll with it. So make sure you guys...
He's over there waiting for the widescreen letterbox edition. The
special
of
edition.
We Can Be Heroes.
Special edition. Oh, Richard in the chat says sidekicks. Sidekicks. It's another good one, yeah.
Throwing out titles.
We're just throwing out titles.
Chuck Norris, yo.
It's good. It's cool. It's cool with me.
We're just random titles.
Yeah, Surf Ninjas from Richard. Thank you, Surf Ninjas.
Indeed, there. Surf Ninjas.
All right, sweet. All right, we keep going for it. Okay, give us another one. We're waiting right here. Anyway, December 11th and 12th, Maui Comic Con, Maui Beach Hotel.
Wait, Greg.
What's up?
Wait, Greg.
What's up?
The rundown.
He's in the rundown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He beats the crap out of The Rock.
Show, I don't remember that, but I love that movie. I can't believe I don't remember him being in it. Wow.
He's also in your favorite Indiana Jones movie.
No, he's not.
He's in Crystal Skull. Yes, he is.
He's in the Crystal Skull?
I'll bet you $1 million.
No way. Who is he in the Crystal Skull?
I'll bet you $1 million.
He's the Crystal Skull.
He's when they go into the catacombs, the first catacombs Indiana Jones goes into, he's one of the guys that they fight.
No,
I don't
way.
Know if he's the guy that he blows the blowgun back into his mouth, but he's one of those guys.
I had no idea. Talk about obscure.
Well, it's not like he's a character in that thing, but yeah, he's in it.
All right. To be fair, Temple of Doom is
So I think I just figured it out. That's what I'm going to have him sign.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. To be fair.
Can you sign my copy of The Crystal Skull? The worst Indiana Jones movie. Whoa. And the movie that you're not even a character in.
That's the second best. The first best is Temple of Doom.
I don't want to insult him because he actually is really cool, but I just think it's funny.
Yeah, well, just bring him in as Surf Ninjas. I think he'll be happy with that, and he'll sign it for you. No problem. I'm pretty sure.
You know, do you think they get annoyed that it's always Surf Ninjas or Ninja Turtles 2? Like, those have to be the most go-to things for that guy.
Probably. If you really want to, you know, shut him out, you could ask him for a signature of a thing that he's not in.
Oh, yeah. Like,
hey, can you sign my copy of Hook?
That's it.
No. I got it. I'll have him sign my copy of the Jonathan Brandis sidekicks.
Oh, yes. Oh, that would be sweet. Do that. Please. Damn. God, do that. Do that. Anyway, December 11th and 12th, Maui Beach Hotel, Maui Comic Con. It's going to be fantastic. Check out Maui Comics and Collectibles for more details in Request Music. Check them out on social media, on Instagram at Maui Comics. And you can check them out online at MauiComicCon.com. That's MauiComicCon.com. Yep. For more information.
You guys?
Oh, I already got my room.
Ooh. They can you should let everybody know, Greg, that they can buy tickets from me for my Comic Con direct. They just gotta message me through Facebook.
Okay, message Gannon through Facebook. Joel, yeah.
Good to know.
Insulting, have him sign a package of Lumpia wrappers. He is Filipino. That is a good point.
Did you just say Lumpia wrappers?
That's what Joel said in the chat.
No, the way you just said it.
Yeah, it's Lumpia.
Is that the way it's pronounced? I'm not sure it is.
Yes. Yes, yeah. It is.
Well, you are the one that's Filipino.
That's right. Or it's Lumpia.
See, I thought it was always Lumpia.
No. All right, relax, Mario.
So that's only if it's Italian.
Yeah. It's a me, Lumpia.
Spaghetti.
Bibbidi boopity. Boppity. Anyway, let's get right to it, shall we? As you know. Last week was Thanksgiving. I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving, but we did get to watch a movie last week.
How was your Thanksgiving, G?
I was by myself eating a turkey breast and vegetables, and that was my Thanksgiving. So, yeah, was great. Yeah.
Easy there, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, so I was...
Can I have some more?
Yeah, it's just me, my thoughts, and my turkey, and my vegetables, and I had a noose hanging in my other room. So,
nice. Too bad it's too high for you to reach.
Yeah, it's too high. Unfortunately, my ceilings are not load-bearing. So, So, unfortunately.
We're going to have to fix that.
Yeah, we're going to have to fix that for sure.
Oh my God, where is this going?
Anyway, as you all know, one of the biggest movies of 2021 finally did release that we've been waiting for
Free Guy. Time.
Ha! No, you are wrong, sir.
Was that not one of the biggest movies of 2021?
As a matter of fact, it was not. Yeah.
How I'm out of the loop?
Yeah. We all went to see. A film that we have been anxiously awaiting for, and that, of course, was Ghostbusters Afterlife. We all got to see it together, which was fantastic. With the exception of Gannon. Gannon came late.
Did not get an invite.
Man. Actually, there was a lot of people that didn't make it.
That's true.
Gannon, Alika.
Yeah, Gannon and Alika didn't make it.
You know who didn't make it to that Ghostbusters movie, right?
Who's that?
Harold Ramis.
Wow, that's horrible. Well, listen, Gannon, since you haven't been on the show in a while, I wanted to start with you. This came out right before Thanksgiving, Ghostbusters Afterlife. We've been waiting at least a couple of years for this movie, directed by Jason Reitman, oversaw by his father, who is the creator of creator of the original Ghostbusters. After getting to see the film and kind of reflecting on it for the last couple of weeks, Gannon, what are your thoughts on Ghostbusters Afterlife?
Well, first, I'd like to say that I'm very happy that Todd is in the air right now going to Seattle instead of being here for tonight's show. Because he and I have been in an epic battle over this movie.
I've been watching it. It's true.
I would like to start off by saying that Todd absolutely hates the movie. Despite anything he says to the contrary.
It's true.
Because even the positive things that he says are actually negative things that he's saying in the very classic Bernardi way.
Yes.
Fair.
That's fair.
It starts out positive, but the more he goes on, it just gets worse and worse.
Yeah, it's classic Todd Bernardi, where even when he starts talking about the things he likes, you get the clear sense that he doesn't like them, and they're actually the negative things.
And he's insulting it. Yeah, it's a good point.
But he's wrong in all of his assessments.
all right. I like that.
In particular to this movie, I mean, the movie is very specifically designed to be an emotional film from start to finish. And the movie had me in the first 5 minutes. The movie is still fairly fresh. So it's kind of hard to talk about it and try to not spoil anything for anybody.
I think it's been out for a couple of weeks. I think it would be okay if we spoiled it.
But you know, the thing is, for me, I would feel genuinely bad that if somebody didn't see it and gotcha. They were watching this right now. I kind of don't want to be the guy to tell them. Only because like this isn't story spoilers. It's more of like an emotional thing that goes through this movie. If there's anything that Jason Reitman does do right,
yeah.
Is he really nails the emotion, and I think the people that don't like this movie or pick apart this movie because of for whatever reasons they have is because this movie, unlike the other two, is more of an emotional movie. It's got more in line with Steven Spielberg Amblin film than it does with specifically the original movie. I don't think Jason Reitman wanted to make a movie like the original movies because this movie doesn't have the edge that, especially the first one. But he doesn't nail everything in all fairness. The stuff that I really loved was the journey that the granddaughter goes on. I loved Carrie Coon's character, although she did feel somewhat marginalized. I kind of hope to have more of her to have a journey than what she got, although it's still fairly satisfying.
Yeah.
The character of Trevor, Finn Wolfhard's character, it there was an element of it where it kind of felt like he doesn't really have much of a part to play in this other than being a male character in the movie, which has been a criticism thrown on him. But yeah, it's actually true. There's really not much to him, honestly. But you know, I mean, it's not a secret that you will get to see the original characters, and it's tied very heavily to the first film in particular, which is one of my criticisms of the movie. I kind of really do wish that there was a different villain. Which again, not trying to get into spoiler territory, I really wish there was a different villain. I think to have it so tied to the first movie, I feel like in a certain way kind of hurt it in a little bit. It would have been nice to have seen a new villain, especially since we're getting an all these years later kind of a movie, and you know, we're really just kind of hitting the same it like the greatest hits kind of a thing. It was very much a movie like Force Awakens, only this movie captured what Force Awakens was trying to do better. In my opinion, anyway.
Right. So, I mean, I think the villain portion is actually a valid point after thinking about it for a couple weeks. I do understand that.
It doesn't hurt the movie to me.
Yeah.
It's just, if we never had another movie since part two.
Right.
It just would have been kind of nice to at least to have seen, and maybe not even necessarily a new villain, but a villain that's tied into the mythology of the previous villains.
Right.
I don't want to spoil anything, but you know, you do get to see some things that you know are fairly familiar to you, even in the sense of things that you've heard of but haven't seen. You know what I mean?
I almost chalked that up, and I'm gonna go to. We'll keep going around Robin here, but I'll go to Format next. I'm almost going to chalk that up to the fact that Jason Jason Reitman spent a lot of time on the Ghostbusters set as a kid in 1984. So
it's very documented. He was.
Yeah.
So, he's in part two.
Oh yeah. So I think that if I'm not, I can almost, I don't want to say let it slide, but I can almost see why he would lean so heavily on that because of the memories that he has of it. Maybe I'm guessing, but I get your point though. I do understand what you mean.
I mean, it's really easy to say that this movie was designed to play on the heartstrings of nostalgia for everybody that loves this franchise. Because let's face it, it is.
Sure.
But I think Jason Reitman wanted to make this movie as a love letter to the franchise and then also specifically to the characters.
Right.
Sony wanted to make this movie, you know, they're the ones that wanted the money part of all of this. I just cannot believe that Jason Reitman was dictated solely by just making a cash grabby franchise film.
I agree.
Because he's never done anything like that before, so why would he start here?
Correct.
He's actually on record as saying he would never make a Ghostbusters 3. They asked him that, like, I think 10 years ago, back when Juno came out. You know, would you ever make a Ghostbusters 3 and follow in your dad's footsteps? And I'm pretty sure he said it back then, he would never do it. So for him to change his mind all these years later is just, you know, because he had a story to tell and he had an idea that he wanted to, you know, he had an idea for Ghostbusters that probably would never have been done, frankly, if 2016 never happened. I don't think Sony ever would have given a chance to this type of Ghostbusters movie if the 2016 movie didn't happen.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I agree with that too. I do agree with that too.
Because the only way to win back an audience that's already turning onto your franchise is to lean back into the nostalgia of it and maybe take it on a more emotional journey than just the superficial, let's just get a cast together and make a comedy film off of Ghostbusters and barely understand anything about what made the original so great.
Yeah, and you're right. I think leaning on nostalgia can be a crutch. And I think in a prime example, I think Star Wars The Force Awakens is a film that is very much nostalgia heavy, and it leans on that, and it kind of comes at the detriment of Force Awakens, because I'm not a big fan of Force Awakens at all.
But you don't connect to anything in Force Awakens emotionally,
right? Exactly.
You really should.
Right.
Like the second that Han Solo confronts Kylo Ren on that bridge, and then I mean we can spoil this one. Han Solo gets killed on the bridge.
Whoa!
I know.
Dude. Man.
They wrote the scene wrong. What the scene should have been is they looked at each other, and before they embraced, Han Solo just shoots his son. Because Han always shoots first, as we know.
It's a good point. I agree.
He could have saved us the misery of the two other sequels.
It's true. It's so
because
true.
Kylo wouldn't have seen it coming. Yep. You know, maybe he could have blocked the shot. Maybe he couldn't have. He probably wouldn't have expected his dad to shoot him. As good as he was with the Force, he probably not. I mean, he was kind of a dummy too. Let's face it. He probably wouldn't have seen that shot coming.
It's true.
He's always having temper tantrums and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't believe for a second that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was the exact same thing as Luke. He's only a Sith master because no one else is around to tell him he's not.
He's not right.
You know, Luke walking into Jabba's palace, I'm a Jedi. And Jabba's like, the hell you ain't. I've actually met real Jedis. The only thing that makes you a Jedi is that there's nobody else around to say you're not a Jedi.
That's correct. Oh, and that slamming black cloak you're wearing. So I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense. You know what?
Like, I bet you found that at Ben Kenobi's hut.
Yeah, he did. But you know what's funny is that, not to go off on the Star Wars tangent, but out of all three of those sequel trilogy, the one that I like the most is the one that everyone hates the most. The Last Jedi. It's so weird. Anyway.
To wrap up my thoughts with Ghostbusters, though, like...
Yes, go ahead.
You know, I can approach it from both minds, where I can approach it very cynically and say, okay, well, they made this specifically to just hit the heartstrings of the fans and to get them back on board with Ghostbusters.
Right.
And sure, but
you wouldn't be wrong.
Based on the execution of it, it's a lot more than that, in my opinion. maybe not everybody's going to get that out of the movie, but I sure did. And I've seen it three times now, and it hits me the exact same way all three times, mm-hmm. no matter how much time I've spent thinking about it. And, you know, again, my cynical brain does kick in this movie. I've had these arguments with Todd, and Todd thinks I'm not being sensical in my approach in looking at the movie, that I'm just purely basing it on emotion.
I've seen your arguments with him. He doesn't think you're being objective enough, and I don't find that you're not. I find you're being objective. I just think you're looking at it.
I can be very objective about it, but the reason why I don't get so laser focused on those things is because the emotional context of what they do with the movie.
Yeah.
Far outweighs anything I could nitpick it for. I could nitpick the hell out of the movie. But again, the reason why I'm not doing it right now is because even though it's been out for a couple weeks now, I'm still imagining that if somebody hasn't seen it yet,
yeah.
I don't want to be, I would hate to be the guy that tells you yeah. some of the stuff you see in that movie. Like, there's actually a toy at Target right now that's a massive spoiler for that movie that I was like, wow, that sucks if you haven't seen this movie.
Oh, I saw it in Target. You're right. It is a huge spoiler.
I took one look at the toy shelf. I'm like, holy crap, that is a massive spoiler for that yeah. movie if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, you're right. I saw it the other day, too, when I was over there.
I mean, maybe after some more time, I'll actually talk about what I'm trying to not talk about, because there's a lot I can say about it. But I don't know. For me, if you're a ghost, I mean,
chicken pig from Shang-Chi.
One of the things I absolutely loved about the movie that nobody really does bring in into their criticisms is that having these kids be the ones that discover all the equipment and actually go on these ghostbusting adventures, even though it's not a very long one, it plays into that childlike wonder of like, oh man, I wish I was a ghostbuster. Like, you know, when we were kids and we grew up with Ghostbusters,
100%.
Like, We would play act in our minds like, oh man, it'd be cool if we could do this with the Ecto-1. You get to see that in this movie.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
You get to see them. The Ecto-1 sequence, which is in the trailer, there's no spoiling that. Is a great sequence.
Yeah,
it's a great sequence, and it's exactly the kind of thing you wish you had seen in the first or second film, or you know, if there were other films after the second one before now. That kind of stuff, them chasing down a ghost down a city street in the Ecto-1, trying to catch a ghost. You know, when we had the toys, we would do that. Like, we actually get to see that, you know, and it's one of the shining moments of the whole movie to have that sequence there. And I love that's the kids doing that, because they could have easily saved that or a moment like that for the original crew guys to do it, so you get to see them in action.
Right.
But kind of the best action is involving the kids, which I thought was... It's an unorthodox choice, because you'd want to see the older guys in action, but it's a little bit more satisfying to see the younger kids doing it.
Is this a bad thing? Because the way you started this whole thing, it sounded like a bad thing.
No.
Like, one thing to point out that not a lot of people are touching on, and then you went into this. So I'm not sure if this is a good thing or a bad thing.
No, when I say criticism, what I meant is that when people critique it, I haven't really seen anybody hone in on the childlike wonder of being a Ghostbuster
in that
particular sequence. They just talk about it being an exciting scene. They don't really think about it in terms of, like, you know, when a child was thinking about, you know, being a Ghostbuster, that's the kind of stuff. Like, man, if I could do that, you know what I mean? Where you get to see kids actually doing that.
It's weird that you mention that, because I think Jason Reitman has done something that Spielberg couldn't do if he were to direct this movie. He actually Spielberged this Ghostbusters movie, which is kind of cool. I mean, and I think you're absolutely right.
It felt very Spielberg-like, especially in the beginning.
I agree, 100%. And the childlike wonder thing is I think that's the connection that we have, because it's not necessarily the fact that this movie is perfect, like you said, but what we're given and what we feel, and that childlike innocence that we have about play acting and being a Ghostbuster, that resonated throughout the film. And I think you hit on something immensely emotional for most people that are fond of the series or any kind of property that they like.
I knew I was in trouble with Jason Reitman with this movie, and I don't want to go too specific, but just that focus shot where he focuses on the PKE meter under the chair.
Oh yeah.
And then it goes off.
Yeah.
That got me emotional, and I was like, oh, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, no, you're, I know exactly, like, what you're talking about.
Like when you on the page, that probably was that probably read as a very throwaway thing or as an indicator of something,
right?
But somehow the way he had shot it, and again, maybe it's just me, I don't know, but it just there's something very emotional in how he framed that moment and how that came about, and just the way he zeroed in on it, I was just like, oh, I already know what movie this is. Because you know, when you're watching the movie or when you're watching the trailers, you're just thinking that, like, okay, so it's just going to be these kids discover the gear. They discover something from the past. We kind of already know the old guys are going to show up. We're probably, you know, I kind of went into it thinking it was probably going to be a little bit more of a fun, nostalgic romp through the Ghostbusters mythology. And maybe when we see the guys at the end, that'll be where the, you know, where it kind of gets emotional for us a little bit. I had no idea that it was going to be a little bit more of legacy and, you know, how tragedy can link people back together again. Like there's surprisingly strong themes in the movie that, you know, I don't know. Again, maybe it's just me that latched onto that stuff, but
no.
Let me tell you, Todd didn't.
No, he did not at all. Speaking of that, speaking of Todd, we got to watch it with Todd Foreman. And not to.
I'm sorry.
Now, it seemed like. Now, it almost seemed like. What did you think, Foreman? Because it's almost like we were in two different theaters when we. You know, we're going to have Todd on and him talk about it, but it almost felt like.
Do we have to?
It's true. It's a good point. I do want to.
I will definitely not be on that episode.
I want to give him his fair shake at critiquing it as well. But Format, you had very strong opinions. You wrote a great review on your Facebook page. Do you echo the same sentiments as Gannon does about this movie?
Yeah. Probably not to the extent of that Gannon's feeling it. That's apparent. Wasn't an emotional thing for me. Yeah, sure. I started getting choked up from the get-go when they showed the Columbia pictures.
You did.
And the theremin played, and yes, I was like, oh.
Yes. Yeah, it's fair.
I was like, this thing started right.
I hope that was a real theremin, by the way, and not they did it all digitally now, because we could.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, so when you were, I mean, you and I watched a lot of movies together, and you had a lot of interesting reactions to the films. It seems like you were rather joyous watching the movie as someone who was there, you know, with you in the film. What exactly was it for you for Afterlife that you really latched onto?
It was seeing the natural progression of things. The fact that Egon, oh man, this is spoiler stuff.
You know, I think it's
so everybody knows about Crossing Streams, right?
Yes.
Everybody knows that, right?
Yes, yes.
The fact that Egon found a way to automate that system was like, what?
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very interesting point too.
I was like, no way. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Because when you have the phone call, you know, from jail, the phone call.
Right.
And Ray starts doing this exposition dump, you're just like, what? Right.
Why would he do this? Yeah.
And then when you see the reason why he did it, you're just like, that's freaking genius.
Yeah.
That's why he's the smartest one out of.
Right. It felt, and like you said, it felt like that I don't know if you felt the same way, but it almost felt like I had wished they had taken like a couple extra minutes in the movie instead of getting that huge exposition dump by Stance. Mm-hmm. I wish they had given it just a little more room to breathe. You know what I mean? Once he hung up that phone, I was like, I really, and I think I mentioned this that night, is I really wanted to see maybe like, you know, just 2 minutes, 60 seconds of Ray trying to convince the other two to kind of, you know, we've got to go do this, you know, and kind of getting them on board with it. You know what I mean? Just to kind
of
see.
Yeah, but the thing is, you spoil the surprise of them turning up.
That is also fair. I agree.
Even though we all knew that they were going to be in there because of the marketing. In the narrative of the movie, the way it's rolling out, you don't want to dole that out. You want the first time you see them to be like, oh my god, there they are.
True.
Building to it where they're gonna get there. It's just like, oh my god, there they are.
Yeah, that's it.
With that said,
they look when they appear too. They just like they're so tired and haggard. Like, all right, guys, let's do this.
We're supposed to suspend our disbelief, but it is a little difficult believing that 100-foot marshmallow man walking through New York City, and then the four of them walking the Statue of Liberty through New York City,
right,
was like completely forgotten in 30 years somehow.
Right.
Like if that happened in real life, we would never stop talking about it.
It's true.
You know what I mean? Not to compare Ghostbusters to real life tragedies or nothing, but you know, never forget.
I knew you were gonna do that. Don't do that. Don't do that.
But it's legitimate though, honestly. I'm not saying they're the same thing, but if something that massive happened in the world,
I think after 30 years it would be more of a not this again.
Yeah. Kind of, but you know what I mean? It wouldn't be like the whole world forgot that they ever existed. You know what I mean? I mean, I know it only happened in New York City, but Stay Puft, as we find out, is still a product in the universe of Ghostbusters.
Right.
So, you know, you almost kind of think of like the Stay Puft company maybe would have even latched onto it for marketing down the road.
Yeah.
Now packed with even more flavor, you know, something crazy, you know what I mean? Like, it's a little bit difficult to buy into, like, they completely forgot who they were.
I can only imagine. It's on the anniversary of the Stay Puft disaster, 1984. Yeah, it's...
He didn't kill anybody.
Yeah, it's weird, though. I think you're
right. Nobody died in the Stay Puft attack, that we know of, but nobody really died, so it's not a huge tragedy, but it is a huge event.
That's true. It's a good point.
Nobody would forget about that. If something like that happened in real life, nobody would forget that.
Yeah. And it's before the internet. So, yeah, I think you're kind of right. That's a very interesting point.
I did love that the archival footage of the Ghostbusters showing up to stop Gozer in the first movie was just flat-out footage of the movie.
Yeah, no, it was. Yeah. It totally was.
Like they didn't even try to like fake the footage to look like old VHS, you know, footage like it probably would have looked like.
Yeah.
It's just flat out footage from the movie.
It's a good point. Well, listen.
I'm sorry. I keep stepping a little formats of you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead, man. You are enjoying yourself.
You're on a roll. Go ahead, and I'll go back to format.
Since I brought footage from the original movie, I do love the that poignant moment that was actually from a deleted scene from the original film that they incorporated into this one in a nice way, which again goes into spoiler territory a little bit, so I don't want to go specific, but it was a nice touch.
Yeah, I agree. Foreman, anything else that you really thought stood out and made this movie exceptional?
No, not really. I mean, Gannon's pretty much hit it on all points. I think the only problem I had with the movie really was Munter.
You know what's funny is that
he's no Slimer, yo.
I have to give you that one because I really didn't and maybe I missed something in the film. I didn't understand Muncher's place as far as that goes. It felt like I don't know why he even existed.
Well, I mean, do you understand why Slimer exists in Ghostbusters? He does exist.
That's fair. No. But what I'm saying is that, right. But we all know that Slimer is an apparition and he's just a ghost, right? Muncher, there was something very specific about him in the movie and that later comes into play at the climax of the film. So, but I just didn't understand, like, Muncher, he's called Muncher because he eats steel and he eats metal.
In all fairness, what Jason Reitman should have done, and this is me armchair directing a little bit,
yeah,
because that town was so close to that temple, he should have played on the spooky things happen in that town, although they don't really see ghosts because they're not really breaking through the barrier yet.
Yes.
But they're still able to have an effect on the town in one way or the other. So you know that, like the library sequence where like the books are moving and the cards start flipping out. Like it would have been kind of neat if he played on that kind of stuff where they were still finding ways to physically interact with that town, even though they couldn't break through and, you know, appear as apparitions just yet. So when they do, that's when we see Muncher. I wish he had done that because because then, you know, they would be coming to the town, you know, there'd be some kind of circumstance that there being spooky things already happening, because that was kind of the premise of the first movie, because, you know, things were kind of leaking through into our world and, you know, they only broke through when the temple started opening up.
And I think that that would have probably made me suspend my disbelief a little more with Muncher if that were the case. I agree with you on that. That does make
sense. I appreciate that they did something different, because, you know, just for nostalgic reasons, he could have easily just made it Slimer.
No, he could have.
Just to have Slimer in the movie. Sure. But to be honest with you, I would have hated that.
No, I would have too. I'm actually with you on that. I wouldn't have liked that either. I agree with you on that.
It would have been nice. I mean, I did love that the Bug-Eye Ghost was there from the old toys. That was fun.
Yeah. That was very cool. Very cool too. Now, format, did you, as far as performances go, was there anybody that stood out to you?
The girl.
Oh, McKenna Grace.
Yeah, McKenna Grace. Like she made the role her own. She's not a carbon copy of Egon. She's like her own person. You know, finding herself, and I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought, and to echo your sentiments, I think McKenna Grace was fantastic in this movie. I linked with her emotionally. In some sense, and that was very well done. I like the fact that she was, she's a vulnerable young girl who knows that she's different from everyone else.
I wouldn't say vulnerable.
Well, and in the fact that she's no, and just like her brother though, they're very vulnerable because they're in a new situation, right? So they're not where they used to be. So they're vulnerable.
I don't know if that's accurate either.
You know,
like, because she's very strong and has a very strong sense of herself. She's just being placed into this environment that she knows that she's smarter than everybody.
That's what I mean. But what I say that's what I thought was interesting is that when I say vulnerable, I don't mean as in the fact that she's timid. What I mean is that she's trying to acclimate herself to new surroundings. Number one, and number two, she's also trying to figure out how to communicate, which I thought was interesting. So I thought that was fun, and it kind of connected me to her, and like, you know, where does she stand in this new kind of order that she's been thrown into?
In more ways than one.
Yeah, exactly.
She's communicating with the townsfolk and also
with other things,
inhabitants of the house.
That's correct, and format. What's interesting about what you said there is, what I thought was interesting is that Jason Reitman played that very well, because instead of her freaking out about it, this is why we know she's different, because she doesn't freak out about it. She actually is very accepting of it. She becomes aware of it, and she knows what's happening almost, but she's never afraid of it, which I thought was very bold, considering the fact, and it actually worked, because you would think that someone
she has a line that explains that. She says that overstimulation calms her.
Correct. Correct.
Which is very, very similar to, I'm terrified beyond the capacity for rational thought.
Something Egon would say. And I really thought that was very well done. I thought that McKenna Grace did a great job. She felt like I could relate to her. It felt like, you know, if I were to put like, you were to put what?
Oh no, just the thought of you thinking that you relate to a 12-year-old girl is hilarious.
But what's interesting is that I relate to her plight as being 12. You understand that, you know, they're.
Oh, I don't care what you meant. Just what you literally said was hilarious.
Shut up. So her emotional state, where she's at, and how basically she is you know, she's very sure of herself, but she almost like she doesn't know her place yet, which I thought was interesting because she actually talks about that later in the film.
Her calling, so to speak.
Right. And that is what got me emotional. I mean,
I think that's one of the more relatable things about the character is, you know, there's a lot of us out there who know, you know what I mean? Like where we sit in the, you know, cycle of life or whatever.
The echelon of people and, yeah.
Right. But there are times when it's not, like, easy to see, you know what I mean? And you know it about yourself, but yeah. Like myself being surrounded by all of these folks here, mm-hmm. like you tend to second guess yourself. Like you got, you know, such great musical talent in the room, and you got the Kai who does a number of really cool things.
Yes,
and then you got G who sits there. So you know what I mean? There's so many.
He sits there relating to 12-year-old girls.
My talents are endless.
Yeah, so you know what I mean? Like, yeah. So there's a lot of times when you just kind of, you don't know where you fit in. And seeing her find her place in the world, it was very relatable, for sure.
Very, very emotional, and I thought that she did very well. Big shout-out to Kathy. She says, sorry I'm late. Don't worry. You only missed Gannon's review of Ghostbusters Afterlife.
I think overall...
Yeah, so she can tune out.
I think overall the entire cast delivered exceptional performances. The only one I was kind of meh about was Finn Wolfhard.
You know, Gannon had the same, I think all of us, and when I go to Kai, he'll probably, I don't know how
he was just there because it was a nostalgia thing, and you
felt,
know,
he felt
Stranger
like,
Things, I guess. I
he felt like he was just the big brother and had no real, like, connection. I mean,
well,
he had more of a connection to the town than he did his own family.
Yes, yeah, yeah. That's a good point. Yeah,
what I did like though is that, and it didn't bang it over the head in an obvious way, is that the four kids were the proxies of the original guys.
Right, and
because we
did fail to
the
talk
character
about
of Lucky, because the character of Lucky was basically Venkman.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Finn Wolfhard's character is basically Winston.
Right.
Podcast is so clearly a Ray.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have McKenna Grace, who's, you know, flat out Egon's granddaughter anyway, you know. So, and it's subtle. Well, maybe it's not subtle, but I mean, it's not so obviously banged over your head that these are proxies to the original guys. You know, like they set up, like almost from the get go, he's fixing the car and he's driving the car, although he doesn't really fix the Ecto-1, you know. He has a little bit of help.
Sure.
But he's... I really hate to say it, but it's also kind of true. Like, he's Winston for this movie in the same way that Winston was Winston for the original movie.
Yeah. I mean...
Like, he's the fourth.
Yeah.
And he's important to the team, but he's not very integral to the story.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Even though he's got a direct link to the family, he's not super integral to the story. So it does kind of honor the spirit of the character that he's the proxy for. But I don't know where I was going with that now. I totally lost my train of thought.
You know, but that's okay, because what I was going to mention was, I don't know if it was you, Gannon, or Todd. I can't remember which one of you, but someone said they didn't like Podcast. I actually enjoyed him. I thought he was a lot of fun. I didn't like that his name was
Podcast. That's all I didn't like.
Oh, okay.
Gannon was like, I hate that kid.
I thought his character was fun. I guess there's two things I didn't like. One, I didn't like his name. I thought his name was like, it just came across as desperate 240-year-old guys trying to come up with a cool name for a kid.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, what are kids like these days? Oh, they like podcasts. Let's name them Podcasts. It just rang like that to me. And, well, I guess it's not that I didn't like it, but it was more of a concern. Where the hell were his parents?
Good point.
They were ghosts.
Through the entire movie, where the hell were his parents? I was really ghosts. Concerned.
I have a feeling that his parents listen to his podcast, and they know what he does around town. So, and remember...
He was literally in jail, and they didn't come to get him.
That's a good point. Podcast
comes from a family where his parents are always like on a trip, and they leave him like money to take care of himself.
He jumped in an old hearse and drove to a farmhouse to go save the world. Where the hell were his parents? They just signed off on that? Like,
for let me tell you something. It's if I may.
Apparently, you're not listening. They're on a trip. They're not there.
No, so, you guys are missing it. It's the Midwest. People trust their kids in the Midwest.
So, he was the only Asian kid in that town. I was worried.
All right, what the hell's going on? That's fair. That's a good point. It's fair. I really like podcasts. Think about it.
There's probably 30 people total in that whole town that you saw. There probably were more, but he was the only Asian of that entire town.
The reason I let podcast name go was because, remember, we used to watch a movie as kids, and that guy's name was Data, and we had no idea what exactly Data was at our ages when we saw that movie.
That's a fair point, but I still hate it.
You can swap out the podcast for anything, like, oh, his name is Bakugan. Yeah. Like, what? What?
Hey, yeah, I'm Tupperware.
Oh, my name is insert favorite anime character.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it's a good point. Oh, it's a good point.
It'd be perfect.
Now,
see, I thought you were going to say I relate more to that podcast kid.
I really like podcasts. I thought he was great.
Because I'm also hardly needed in this story.
You bastard.
I liked him. I liked podcasts a lot.
I did too.
He reminded me so much of Ray.
Yeah, yeah. I really...
Just excitable, you know, I saw somebody, and just... Somebody posted in a review that, like, when they jump in the car, they're automatically really good at using everything in the car. And I was like...
No, they're not.
He's driving a remote-controlled car. What kid can't do that?
Yeah, yeah. And they didn't know everything about the car. They didn't know. I mean, they know how to drive it. All she had to do was pull a lever for that chair to come up. Anyway, you see it in the trailer.
Well, he kicks it by mistake. But if you pay attention to that sequence, they fail the first two times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. It would have been different if she caught it immediately and threw it in the trap. Right. They failed three times. Well, they failed twice trying to catch it. And, you know, Todd.
That's why they get arrested.
And then Todd loves pointing out, like, oh, once she catches it in the Neutrona beam, all Finn Wolfhard's character had to do was slow down the car. And I was looking at Todd, be like, have you never watched a movie before? We all know that.
Yes, we do, Todd.
But visually speaking, if he does that, the entire sequence loses its energy.
That's correct.
On a technical level. But then also, in the scope of the story, you're a 15-year-old boy. You're wrapped up in the moment. You're probably not even thinking about
correct.
That.
Correct. Bingo. Ding, ding,
so
ding,
I can excuse
ding,
it on two levels. One, on a filmmaking level. And two, in a story level, you're a 15-year-old boy who... just now, in the middle of figuring out how to make this car work, all of a sudden now you're catching a ghost within 20 minutes.
Right. And
he's not thinking clearly. Correct. I don't even know if I would.
Right. No, your adrenaline is pumping. I agree 100% with you, Gannon. 100%.
I'm in my 40s. I'd probably do the same damn thing. It'd be something sticking on the side of my car, catching a ghost, and be like, oh, did you get it? Did somebody get the trap underway? I'd still be driving like 80 miles an hour, not even thinking about it.
That's a good point.
There'd probably be somebody else in the back seat be like, hey, what if you just slow down? Because we already have it. We're like, oh, that makes sense. And then I stop. But, you know, they needed a fourth person in there.
Oh, man. Well, I tell you
I think, and I know they did it for toys, but I think they spent a lot of time with that remote control trap out, like, a lot. It's like, you guys would move a lot faster if you guys just put that thing back in the car.
Yes, and just put it on the hood. Just throw it right on the hood of the car and just drive. Yeah, I agree. 100%.
I'm not going to lie. When I saw that in the movie, I was just like, oh, they're going to make a ghost trap RC car thing, aren't they? And then the second I had that thought, I was like, I don't know if I can resist buying one.
Right?
Good point.
Like, if I found that at Target like tomorrow, I'd be like, god damn it, I'm about to buy a radio controlled ghost crap. God damn it.
Dang. Kai,
it's gonna be like $400, but I'm gonna buy it anyway. wait. Before what? We do Kai, I've been like, this is half the reason why I wanted to be on tonight's show to talk about Ghostbusters.
Why is that?
Because we just brought the car and the gunner seat. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to propose this to the Nerd Watch that existed when the original guy still had the car.
Correct.
So if it was the original guys doing that, that cat trying to catch Muncher, who is where?
Okay. So it's interesting you bring this up, because this is what I'm thinking. Okay. In my head, the person that is driving is Winston. Okay?
Yeah.
The person,
that's a given.
I think that's a given, yeah.
The person in the passenger seat is Ray. The person in the back seat, is Egon, and the guy in the ejector seat is Venkman.
See, I literally looked at the movie. I was thinking to myself, like, this is exactly how the original crew would have done it.
Right.
It would have been Egon on the seat.
You think Egon would be on the seat?
Because it would have been Ray on the RC car.
Okay. Okay. That's okay. Fair.
And Venkman, if you really pay attention, he's the laziest of the four Ghostbusters. If he doesn't have to be involved, he's not doing it.
Yes. Yes.
So if we go back to what I was saying before, if we're talking about them as the proxies of the original guys, I think that's exactly how that would have gone down with the original crew.
Okay, I could see that. So Egon would be the one in the ejector seat.
However, Ray is actually more of the thrill seeker, so he would probably want to be on the gunner seat, and then Egon would have been on the RC car.
Interesting. Okay.
Because just when I thought I had to figure it out, I was like, but wait a minute. Ray is more of the thrill seeker of the four of them. He would be the first guy to be like, I would love to, because, you know, he gets excited about the fire pole.
It's true.
You know what I mean? So he's the guy that's all about what's the fun crap. He would have more fun on the gunner seat. So now I'm thinking Ray is on the gunner seat. Egon is on the RC car. Bankman's just chilling.
Well, Joel says Winston would be driving in the chat. And then Kathy said he's a flirt. I'm assuming she's talking about Venkman, is what I'm guessing. And I guess Venkman, if you think about it that way, Venkman would be in the passenger seat. That does make sense. Okay.
Well, pictured in the scope of how it would have happened if there was a Ghostbusters 3.
Right.
Let's say Dana decides, hey, I'm not doing anything today. I'll just jump in the car with you guys and go catch some ghosts or whatever. He's just making out with her in the back seat while they're doing their thing.
Interesting. Okay, that does make a lot of
sense. You know what they did not answer in this movie that could possibly pay off in the next one, though, if they do a second one after this? What the hell is going on with Oscar?
Yes, good point.
Some folks have been saying that they kind of are trying to write Ghostbusters 2 out of the continuity of the movies, because there's not a lot of time given to Ghostbusters 2 as far as the nostalgia trip goes. But I completely disagree, because Ray's occult bookstore exists in Ghostbusters 2. You see the toaster in Egon's lab. You know, like, there are nods to it, but it just doesn't lean on it because it has nothing to do with that story. But, you know, we don't ever get to find out what the hell happened to Oscar.
Maybe Oscar has taken up the mantle.
And Oscar would be like our age right now.
No, right, he would be. And Oscar, maybe he took the mantle from his mother and is also a well-distinguished cellist in the New York Philharmonic.
Did it bother you guys that the movie completely messed up it continuity it actually brought up for itself?
What I mean is that
Ray literally tells the girl on the phone call, which isn't really spoiler territory. Ray tells the girl on the phone, the firehouse is a Starbucks now.
Yeah.
But we find that to be way not the case later in the movie.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And I was like, but wait, didn't he say it was a Starbucks?
In this very movie, it
would have been different if it was like, you know, it was a whole other movie. He said it was a Starbucks, and then we catch up in another film or whatever, and it's not anymore, but it's literally in the exact same movie.
I think maybe he was trying to get her off the scent. You just blew Kathy's mind. What? A Starbucks? Yes, Kathy, yes.
He says it in the well, maybe she didn't see the movie. I hope this sounds spoiler. But anyway, in the phone call,
she hasn't. Oh my god,
you've ruined it.
She hasn't seen it.
In the phone call between him and
all of our viewers.
Yeah. When she calls and talks to him, he says, oh, the firehouse is a Starbucks now. He says that. And then later on in the end of the movie, you're just like, wait a minute. Didn't he say it was a Starbucks? If this is still Starbucks, this is the crappiest looking Starbucks I've ever seen.
If there's one guy that could get Starbucks out of there, it would be Winston and his millions and millions of dollars. Oh, spoiler.
Yeah, I did some research.
Yes.
Just a quick scanning through the real Ghostbusters, the animated series.
Yes.
And the seating for the Ecto-1 is Winston drives, Venkman sits shotgun, and Ray and Egon are in the back. But whenever they use the cannon on the roof, it's always Egon.
Egon's always using the cannon on the roof.
Yeah.
But that, again,
that's the real
that.
Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah, in the cartoon there was. In the cartoon there was.
Oh, but then with the Ecto-2, it was always Ray in the Ecto-2.
I don't remember.
When it would shoot out the back and fly around?
Jeez, I don't remember that. That's crazy.
Yeah. You guys remember the cannon on the top of the car, but not the Ecto-2?
I don't remember the Ecto-2. Wait, was that in...
Well, yeah, it makes sense because he's in the back with the equipment.
I still think Ray's on the gunner seat, though. In the realm of the movie,
so we can move on now.
You're wrong.
I'm not sure there was a cannon on the top of the car in the cartoons. I don't remember that ever being a thing.
I'm pretty sure it was. I'm pretty sure that there was a cannon on top.
I know there's promotional art tied to the cartoon where Venkman was standing on the top of the car with a gun, and there was like a seat that you would attach to the toy. But I don't remember there ever being a cannon on top of the car. I'm not saying it wasn't there. I'm just saying I don't remember it.
Well, I tell you what, getting back to the Ghostbusters Afterlife movie, Kai,
Starbucks.
Kai, do you have any thoughts? Since we haven't gone to you yet,
is Kai even still here?
Kai,
he fell asleep.
Kai, watched it with us. What did you think?
I can't articulate it the way you guys can, so I'm just gonna say I liked it, and everyone should go watch it.
Good. Well, let me give you my
watch it with your eyeballs and your ear holes.
Yes, let me give you my quick review. I said this the night of the film. I loved it.
You hated it.
I loved every minute of it. I will say I did, and I loved every minute of it. There were problems with the movie structurally. I think that what ends up happening for me is that some of those structural story arcs can be forgiven for me because of what I was feeling in the film. I really thought that it wasn't explained. I don't think that the explanation of why Egon was directed towards the Midwest the way he was. I didn't think that they explained that.
I thought they explained pretty well, actually.
What I'm saying is that it was a little convoluted because, you know, if we talk about it, we get into spoilers.
In a movie
territory.
About
yeah,
ghosts and busting
part.
Of ghosts?
Correct. And that's why.
It's convoluted?
I can forgive those things because it's a movie about ghosts. So I'm not going to cast a serious critique on a film that's trying to have fun. So, but yes, there are things that are structurally wrong with the story. But what is tremendous is McKenna Grace. She is spectacular. I think that she was the heart of this movie. I thought, just like Gannon, I thought Carrie Coon was great, except she wasn't.
She was a lot of fun in that movie. Yeah, she really was.
She is, she does get a bit marginalized, but I think what makes up for it is what happens at the end of that film.
Well, the thing, I mean, you know, for her, the movie's not about her.
It's not.
So, of course, she gets a little sidetracked off the map for a little bit.
Yeah.
So, it is kind of a bummer. But I don't know. For me, I liked her character, so it would have been nice to have seen her woven in more. But honestly, I don't know how it could have been done. You know?
I think that the one person that we have not talked about, and I think that deserves a lot of credit, and
Rick Moranis.
That is Paul Rudd. Because Paul Rudd,
like I said, Rick Moranis.
This movie's Rick Moranis.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert: he's the Rick Moranis of this movie.
What I liked about Paul Rudd is that Paul Rudd could have overplayed his hand and been Paul Rudd to the fullest. He didn't, and he knew his place in this film, and he was better for it. And so I commend him for that. I thought that was.
If you know anything about Paul Rudd, as much as he was probably like the single star. You know, let's face it, he's the star of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
He, in everything he's in, he's always a team player. He doesn't make it about him if there's a whole team of people involved.
He did a very good
job. When you watch any movie he's in, if you're really paying attention to him, he could easily just try to dominate, even if he is the star of a movie, which he is, frankly, in this one, and yet he doesn't. He plays his cards, he does his job, and he gives everybody their room to shine. Because he's acting with McKenna Grace, and he's the bigger star of the two of them, but you're focusing your attention is on McKenna Grace, as it should be, because narrative speaking, it's her story.
Yeah.
But he could have easily tried to outshine her acting chop-wise or comedic role-wise. You know, he could have resonated more just by his presence, but he played his part.
Yeah, and
he's a team player.
He did a great job, and I have to commend him for that. And I think that he is. I think that he kind of, and dare I say this, he kind of glues everybody together with the kids and the mom, and him is kind of like the catalyst for all of them, which I thought was really nice.
He does a good job of doing that, no matter what film he's in.
Right. And he did a very good job here, and I really appreciated what he brought to the table, and I don't want to make it sound bad, but he didn't Paul Rudd this thing. You know what I mean? And that's what he did. He did a great job, and I really commend him for that.
In a weird, understated way, he's kind of the thing that helps her mom start to understand her.
Bingo. Yeah.
Because you get a sense that, like, she it's not that she doesn't love her daughter, but she doesn't get her daughter.
She doesn't connect on her level.
Her daughter is on a whole other level from everybody else in the family. She doesn't get her daughter, like, how she is that way, why she is that way. You know, she doesn't relate to her. Not to say she doesn't love her, but that dude is attracted to attracted is the wrong word, but you know what I mean? Like he meets the daughter, like, holy crap, there's somebody in this town that's as smart as me, maybe even smarter than me. And he's just blown away by her. And when he has his relationship with the mom, like she's finally seeing like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So she's not that weird.
Right.
You know, she is weird, but you know, there is a place for her to fit into. She just has to figure it out.
Yeah, and I think.
But let me tell you. Let me tell you. And I'm sorry, I keep interrupting everybody, or maybe I'm not.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
That last moment, though, where everybody, like the whole plan goes to hell, everybody's lost. The bad guy looks like they're about to win, and at the very last second, she stands up to this thing by herself.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get into what happens after that, but just that part alone, I was like, that is dope.
No, it is. It is. And like you said, I didn't want to spoil it.
Even before that, when she goes and does her comedy routine, like that takes a lot of guts to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a great point, Format, because in the original, the four guys faced down the villain.
Right.
They approached it together. And, you know, the charm of the movie is, like, they clearly didn't have much of a plan. They're just like, we're just going to go up there and figure it out along the way. She actually did have a plan. Granted, she didn't dream up the plan herself. But you're right. She literally walked in there alone.
Yeah.
Knowing full well, like, oh, I could probably die doing this.
Yeah.
But somebody's got to do it. Nobody else believes in me, so she just goes in there. But she faces it down twice. The villain down twice. And the fact that she does that at the end, knowing full well she can't possibly beat it on her own, and she still does it, that's where the scientist part of her goes away.
Right.
And the hero part kicks in.
Right.
You know, the hero's journey, like, even if the hero is probably going to lose,
right,
they you know, go down fighting at the very least.
And she earns it. That's the cool part, is that we've I hate to say this, but in the last couple of years, we end up getting a bunch of rays that just are automatically powerful 100% of the time. She earns every bit of what she gets at the end of this movie.
And that's a great point, Greg, because that end moment is almost beat for beat the way it plays in Rise of Skywalker.
Right. That's the funny part, right?
It's almost beat for beat what happens in Rise of Skywalker.
Right.
But you don't really care about any of these characters.
Yep.
You don't really. I mean, you know, you follow them for the last three movies, but you just kind of like, oh, whatever. She's fighting the Emperor. Whatever. Yep. She's going to beat him. Okay, fine. Oh, she beat him. Oh, she needed two lightsabers. That's the trick. That's what she needed.
That's what she needed.
What I mean? Like,
yep.
All she needed was two lightsabers. She could beat them.
Yeah, 100%.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
If Mace Windu had two lightsabers, we wouldn't have had all those movies.
Bingo. McKenna Grace's character earns every bit of it at the end of the film, and that is what the hero's journey is all about, and she is fantastic in it. And I got it, and I will say this, the way to kind of wrap it up, at that night I had said I gave it a 3.5 star rating. I think it's a 4-star movie, number one. Number two, what I think was what, and this is the biggest thing about this film, the end credit scene, not to give anything away, okay, after knowing what we do, what we know about the end credit scene, and I will say this.
Wait, which one?
Both of them. The first one in particular. I don't think
that's not too spoilery.
Yeah, I will say this, and I don't think, and I still hold to this after 2 weeks after watching this film. If we had gotten Ghostbusters Afterlife before Ghostbusters 2016, I can guarantee you that Ghostbusters 2016 would have been received much better if we had just gotten this. And I don't think that the
no, I disagree entirely. No,
but what I'm saying is, though, the way they set up Afterlife is that the way they set up at the end of Afterlife is that now we can move on from the canon of the group and we're moving on to new adventures. And I think that regardless, no, I'm not saying that Ghostbusters 2016 wasn't bad, because it's a bad movie. I am not a fan. But what I'm saying is that I think as fans, we would have enjoyed what we had gotten before, and everything coming after would have been like icing on the cake. So
I you know, here's why I disagree with you, though. They never would have made Afterlife if they didn't completely botch their first attempt at a Ghostbusters movie after
two. That's an interesting point too.
Sony never in a million years would have let Jason Reitman make exactly this kind of movie as the first Ghostbusters movie since what, 90 or 89. They never would have let this be the Ghostbusters movie to be made since 89.
Yeah.
Had Ghostbusters 2016. I mean, you know, I love that there's people that want to support it for whatever reasons they have, but if you cannot deal with the reality that Ghostbusters 2016 is the scary movie version of Scream to Ghostbusters.
Wow, that is exactly what it is. That is crazy.
I don't know what to tell you. I really don't know what to tell you. I don't want to argue about it, but that's exactly what that movie is. It's a cheap comedy based off of a much better classic film.
I have never heard of it.
About being precious about an IP. Yeah. It's literally a cheap comedy film that's just using an IP to franchise. That's all it is.
And it's almost beat for beat the original Ghostbusters, which is crazy. And you're right. I've never heard that example before, but the scary movie comparison is apt. Absolutely apt to your. I think that is a brilliant statement, Gannon, and I think you're absolutely 100% right. So
By the way, it would have been the same no matter what that cast was. Like, let's say it wasn't an all female cast. Let's say they'd gone with what they were talking about years ago, or it'd be like Ben Stiller and Seth Rogen and whoever the, you know, insert famous actor of the time into that movie. It would have been the exact same thing. If that was the tone of the movie they were going for, they just completely misunderstood the tone of what that movie is. And it's not to say it has to be, but it's literally just a cheap comedy film using an IP as a franchise. That's all that movie is.
That's crazy.
You know? When you look at the original film, it's an actually great story with great actors that have great chemistry that actually goes somewhere with a story and sets up a mythology. You know what I mean? You could argue that the 2016 one sets up a mythology too, but it's a cheap comedy film. Let's face it. It really is.
And if that's enough for people,
that's great. But it's not enough for me. If that's the best you can do with such a great idea.
Yeah, then
that's not good enough for me.
I agree with you 100%. And maybe I'm giving Ghostbusters 2016 too much credit. Wow, you're right. That's almost convinced my. I recant my statement. I think you're right. It would not have been accepted. You're 100% right. I don't think it would have now. Thinking about it the way you have and the way you put it in that statement and comparing it to Scary Movie is crazy. And I never thought of it that way. It was amazing.
And let me be clear, I'm a huge Ghostbusters fan. Always have been. In some cases, I'm almost more of a Ghostbusters fan than even Star Wars.
I am too. 100%.
So I really struggle with trying not to be precious about it, but the fact of the matter is that's exactly what the 2016 movie was.
Yeah.
If you still liked it for what it is, then fine. That's great. I'm not saying you shouldn't, but that is what that movie is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trying to color it any differently, I don't know. It's silly to try and color it any differently. It's not an important film just because of XYZ reasons.
Yeah.
It's a cheap comedy. It would have been the same thing if it was anything. You know what I mean? If it was, again, like I said, if they did a whole male cast again, let's say they just completely remade it with a whole bunch of new actors and that was the tone they went for. It completely misunderstood what all the things that made the original one great.
Yeah.
And here comes Jason Reitman making a Ghostbusters film that is absolutely none of those things.
Right, right.
It's not a cheap comedy. It's not a comedy where the comedy comes from the circumstances, which is what the first movie is. I still struggle to this day calling the original film a comedy film.
I agree.
Because it's actually a deadly serious story. The comedy just comes from having those actors in these serious situations.
But and that's the thing is that they play it serious, and that's what but makes it, feels it funny.
But it feels realistic. You know what I mean?
And it makes it funny. That's the whole point.
It doesn't feel like the movie is designed around a bunch of skits to bring comedy out of it. Like they wrote a story and put those actors into it to find the humor in the moments.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas when you watch Ghostbusters 2016, you can tell they're just allowed to wing it and just making shit up as they go along, saying shit that's not funny.
Everything's a gag. You're right.
Everything's built around gags, and like the suits and the proton packs, the equipment, and all the Ghostbusters stuff is just thrown in to be a star vehicle to these comedic actors.
That's crazy. Yeah,
I can't say the original one was made that way. I mean, you know, it's a struggle to say that Ghostbusters 1984 was made as a star vehicle for Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, and Harold Ramis. Harold Ramis wasn't a hot comedic star. He was more of a writer director.
That's correct.
Well, maybe not a director then, but he was more of a writer.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think Harold Ramis was ever really comfortable being an actor, honestly.
He wasn't originally
part of the cast.
Yeah,
to be fair.
Yeah, I mean that's a fair statement. I think he's once again he's more of a writer and a director. I completely agree with you 100%.
Like once Ghostbusters 2 had come out, like what's the last thing he acted in? I can't even think of anything.
I can't really. Well, like I said, I can't really either. I mean, the only thing other than Ghostbusters that Harold Ramis is in that I know of, there's two movies. Number one is one of my other favorite movies, Stripes, which I love. And the other movie
is... That was before, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. But he's also in a movie before that where he plays kind of like the jerk, and that's Baby Boom with Diane Keaton.
Oh, wow, that's a deep cut.
Yeah, deep cut. So, and I know that he's in that movie, too. But ultimately, I will say this. I think that this movie has closed the canon on the guys that we love in Afterlife. I think that this is, without a doubt, a great movie. I think even with its flaws, I think it is fantastic. I recommend it. Richard in the chat said it's already made like $120 million, which is crazy. No one gave this movie a chance. As a matter of fact, there are a bunch of people that are hating on the movie because they like the 2016 one, and they hate the fact that this movie's making more money, which is weird, but okay, that's cool, whatever. You like what you like.
I mean, I get that there's like social, political reasons to support 2016, even though everything about it is not really supportable. No, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Fair.
Just being critical of it right now. Like, I mean, back then, remember how it was when that movie came out? Like, just being critical about it kind of sort of made you an anti-feminist.
Yes, yeah. It was
just
so
because
weird.
You said you didn't like it. Yeah. Like, I thought that was so ridiculous because me saying I don't like it has nothing to do with the fact that it's about women. That's not the thing I don't like about it.
Yeah, 100%.
That's not at all the thing I don't like about that movie.
Yeah, 100%. I completely agree with you.
Although Melissa McCarthy was extremely, extremely obnoxious in that movie.
Yeah, I think that Leslie Jones was more obnoxious, and I just could not wrap
my
head
around her. Actually, I like Leslie Jones. You know what? She seemed very obnoxious in the trailers, but she actually was the only thing lending some sense of reality to the movie.
Yeah.
Because she was the only character that actually seemed scared by what was happening.
That's a good point.
There is a moment in the 2016 one that I actually did kind of like when she was in that room with the mannequin that kept moving around.
Oh, yeah.
I genuinely thought that was actually kind of cool. If they had done more stuff like that in the movie, it probably would have won me over a little bit.
Wow. That's crazy, Gan. I can't believe it. Well, listen, final thoughts before we get out of here, format. Before we wrap things up here, final thoughts on Afterlife, and give us a star rating, brother.
I didn't really like 2016, but I thought the equipment was cool.
That's fair. That's fair. I can get behind that. That makes sense. That makes sense. What did you think of Afterlife, sir? What are your final thoughts?
I thought it was cool, but I think the equipment wasn't as good.
As the 2016? That's fair. That's fair. On a scale of 1 to...
Yeah, it was great. It was great.
On a scale of 1 to 5 stars, where do you put it?
I give it 5.
5 stars. Wow, crazy. Yeah. That's fantastic.
I don't give out 5s much.
Yeah.
But I feel like Afterlife earned it.
Yeah. Kai, what about you? Where do you put this on your Pantheon and star list?
I give this... I'll give it this a 5 as well.
Wow.
I like the movie.
Wow.
I highly enjoyed it, so go watch it.
Gannon, what about you? Where do you put this? Gannon.
We lost Gannon.
Come in over. Did we lose Gannon? I think we might have. All right. Well, then here's...
Well, he was going in the robot speech for a bit there.
He was? So okay, maybe that's what it is.
He may have finally disconnected.
I will give
you... You guys can't hear me, really?
No, there you go.
There
now
you
can
are.
Hear you. Now
there
we can are. Hear you. Now we can hear you. So what...
I said I thought it sucked.
Oh, good. Okay, then what's your star rating?
Oh, man.
If you thought it sucked...
No. You know, this sounds a little overstated, but it is true, and it's hard to say about a corporate product, which frankly all of these things are corporate products.
Sure.
But the whole point of art is to make people feel something. That's literally the whole driving force to art. So as far as my feelings of it, I had very, I got very emotional about it. I have very strong feelings about it. So it's a perfect execution, with that being the point of the movie. But if you're going to go into it expecting a really deep story or a complicated story or a deepening of a mythology, then this movie's going to completely fail you. If that's what you want out of the movie, it's going to completely fail you. This is how the movie failed Todd, because that's what he wanted out of the movie, and that's not what he got out of the movie. So I think because he didn't get that, he may or may not have closed himself off from the rest of it.
Wow. So what do you think?
But as far as a perfect execution of what the point of the movie was, which I completely believe is what Jason Reitman was going for, it completely nails it. If you could, people are coming out of the movie crying. That's a strong emotional reaction to a movie. You know what I mean?
It is a strong reaction to a movie called Ghostbusters.
This is the longest. I gave it 5 stars that I've ever heard.
Because
I think it's important to say. For a lot of people that come down on this movie, it's just like there's really no counterpoint to a lot of that. It feels like, so that's why I'm just trying to get my piece out of it.
That's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair.
For sure, dude.
So what do you?
I would give it 5.
5 stars. Fantastic.
I would give it 5. And Ghostbusters 2016, I would give that a 6.
Wow, good for you. Good for you. You're not an anti-feminist.
Only because I want women to still like me.
I will say that I will stick to my 4-star rating just because I'm a snobby film critic. But I will say this, in my heart, if I was a kid, this would be a 5-star movie and I'd watch it over and over again. And I can't wait to own it and watch it at home. Can we all guess
would
what?
Would you give it a 4.5?
I'll give it a 4. Can we all guess what Todd would give this film?
Good man. I hate when people give half ratings.
I think you already gave a star rating to it. I think when we talked about it, I think when we were talking about it at the bar, I think he said if he were going to give it a star rating, he would give it a 3, I think.
Such a liar.
No, I really didn't think he said that, but it was based only on because he loves seeing the gear and that kind of stuff. Like he said, the little kid, I shouldn't be speaking for him, but like, that's the stuff that he said he liked seeing. It was like all the equipment and the gear. Like it hit his inner child to see all that stuff back in action again. So if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And he's probably going to do the show the next time I'm off of here, but I bet you I'm right.
Well, let's hope that since he's in, where is he? Is he in Oregon? Is he doing Emerald City Comic Con?
He's doing Emerald City. That's Seattle.
Oh, that's Seattle. Oh, I'm sorry. My bad. Well, Good luck to you, Todd. 3 stars. I doubt it. I think he's giving it 2.5. I don't know. But, well, I will give him his piece.
That's the thing about Todd, though, because, like, he starts out liking it, yeah, and then the more he talks about it, the worse and worse it gets.
Yeah, he talks himself out of it. It's so stupid. It's the weirdest thing.
Like, when he first came out of the theater, I swear he would have given it, like, a 4, mm-hmm. a 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the more he kept talking about it, the more he started ripping it apart, and then... And then my inner child was like crying inside.
It was,
and I was like,
was
why
crying.
Are you doing this?
That's true. It's a good point. Anyway, people, it has been an absolutely wonderful, wonderful opportunity to go take your family to go see Ghostbusters Afterlife. I will say this. I want you to know that this is very much Jason Reitman did his best to pay homage to what has come before him with Ghostbusters Afterlife, but he also made this movie his own.
It's homage.
It's yes, and he also made this movie his own, and he what he leaned on the most is what makes the film the strongest. And that and the, his strengths are his dramatic
girders.
Turns. And Jason Reitman is very good
at
that.
He leaned on girders.
Yes, he did. Oh, what happened to Oh, he's out of here.
We lost Gannon.
That's right.
He was like bleep bloop bleep
yeah,
bleep and then he left.
Anyway, we are out of time, boys and girls. Go watch Ghostbusters Afterlife. I will say that. Oh, there he is. I will say this as well. Coming out this week, if you can grab it, Shang-Chi is out on 4K Blu-ray today, or I believe it was yesterday. I think so. It's out on 4K. Pick up your copy of Shang-Chi. Go support Destin Daniel.
That's another movie that Todd hates.
What?
Whoa! If you want a really good movie on hard media, you need to go get Malignant.
Oh, Malignant is out too. Malignant is fantastic. If you have not seen Malignant, you know, you should. Malignant,
Shang-Chi is up there too.
Malignant and Shang-Chi are two great films.
You don't have to pick between the two. You can get them both.
That's a good point. Check out Malignant. It is a fantastically fun horror movie that I highly, highly recommend. I absolutely loved it.
Don't let anyone tell you what that movie is correct. About, like, or anything. Just watch that movie cold.
Correct. Do not let anybody talk to you about it. Don't
watch
let them
watch the trailer if you want to.
Yeah, yeah.
But don't ask anybody about that movie. Don't spoil the movie for yourself. Just watch it and then let me know if that's your thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I 100% agree with you. I say go in as cold as you can, because Malignant, I went in completely cold. I don't even remember watching the trailer for it, and I was blown away at how much I loved it.
Well,
so,
it's funny because the trailer makes it just looks like another Conjuring movie.
Yeah, it does, and that
you really get justice. No sense of what that movie is actually like off the trailer at all.
Correct. It does.
It's a whole 180 from what the trailer makes it look like.
Right. 100%. And if you can put that on your list, Malignant is out now along with Shang-Chi. Pick them up. It is very
see it
good.
Cold.
See it ice.
I mean, oh,
go
I wanna...
visit Costco before you see it, and go stand in the frozen room,
the frozen section.
I want to support Mr. Cretton, but I mean, how much money does he make off everybody buying those Blu-rays? Because I don't think he does.
Well, I'm just saying we support the
as far
guy.
As Disney's concerned, he's been paid. I don't think he's making any more money off
all
of
right,
those.
That's fair. That's a good point. But let's just say that we liked it enough that we'll support him and grab his movie. Let's just say that. I think that'll be a good choice. So
is he making Shang-Chi 2 yet?
I think it's going to be called Shang-Chi's, right? That's the sequel?
Shang-Chi with like the little two over the top of it, you know?
yeah, with the two squared Shang-Chi's. Sweet.
Oh, wait. What? Shang-Chi, when you take the S up, put the two there?
Yeah. Yes, that's what you do.
Twang-Chi's?
We're such idiots. Anyway, I want to send a big shout out to everybody that was on board tonight, to Joel and Richard and Kathy, and of course we also had she was here earlier today, that was Jennifer as well, and even our good buddy from Doc was on as well. So big shout out to you guys. Thank good you guys
oh my
for
god
us.
More people watch the show than are in it tonight. That's rad.
That's crazy.
Good.
I will say this. Make sure you guys tune in because I've got to go because I got another Facebook podcast to do. Big Fat Nation coming up very shortly.
Your OnlyFans cam show. Every, just be honest.
Every night at 9 p.m. Hawaii time. Big Fat Nation is on Facebook. Check that out too. We are out of time. So for
you should name yourself podcast.
I should. Out of time. So
you
my
have
buddy,
so many podcasts.
Guy, the Dark Knight Ganon, the Gaming Guru.
Oh
Format.
My God! I haven't been I here in so long. You forgot who I am.
Peace out.
Jesus
much
Christ!
Love, most certainly, always stay nerdy. We're out of time.
Get that twang cheese.
Aloha.